Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. In our world today, roles of family have changed, and so frequently we will hear conversations or statements about young men, especially, displaying behavior that is absolutely, as far as I'm concerned, undisciplined, should not be tolerated. And when you find out more about what's going on behind the stuff that they do, usually it's because they don't have a good male role model. Now, this is a subject that I know a lot of people like to talk about. We talk so frequently about women and how they often need to have a role model as well. But the psychology of the female often is very different from the psychology of the male. And I can imagine some of you saying, yeah, Donna, duh. I'm sure that anybody with 5 cents worth of common sense can figure that one out. But we really don't. And so many times the role of the male, the mature male, has been eliminated in society. And my guest today, Nick Clements, has put together a book called The Alpha Wolf. Now, typically when we hear the term alpha, it's like aggression, we're going to be bossy, we're going to be dominant, and we're not going to think very much. I think by the time we finish talking with Nick, you're going to find out that there are definitely, from a man's viewpoint, specifics of maturation that need to be cultivated and developed. Nick Clements, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. How are you?
Well, I am doing wonderfully. I was so delighted to get your material because there's not been a lot about the role of the male. And if you look at history, there's a lot of the male role models that leave a lot to be desired, as far as I'm concerned. That's my particular bias. And I find even today that integrity, personal responsibility, things like this, there's just a lack. I have to say it many times with a female role model as well, but with a male. We're going to be talking about the men today.
Yeah.
And you're a professor. Mm-hmm. You have done a lot of study about the rites of passage, how males have to earn an understanding of their positioning of responsibility in the world and how older men need to really be the guardians of that. And in a lot of cultures, that has been the case, good, bad, or indifferent. And I just so appreciated your book because you came from a positioning of not bashing, but saying, you need to understand certain things. Let's get into this. Now, being a man, was there a personal experience for you, Nick, that made you say, by golly, we've got to put something down in writing. We have to have something that women and men can read. What motivated you to do this?
Yeah, I mean, as with most people's work, it's from my personal story, you know, that my father was a very violent man. He was an alcoholic. And I left home at a very early age and spent a lot of my life being very angry with my father for what I perceived to be his failings in the way that he brought me up. And, you know, then I became a father myself. And with that, I started to understand why he was the way he was. You know, I was able to get a comprehension of the pain and the suffering which he'd been through, which up until that point I had no regard for. And I suddenly realized, you know, what an amazing role model he was in negativity for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that led to me exploring rites of passage, you know, that I felt I hadn't been given a rites of passage into adulthood. And I started living and working with indigenous people around the world and came across, you know, this idea that, as you said, men need to be initiated into manhood, into fatherhood, into eldership, and they need the support of other men in doing that. And we just don't do it. You know, all our kids, as you were saying at the beginning, you know, they're desperately trying to initiate each other into manhood. Driving cars very fast or drinking booze, taking drugs. If they had elder men who were prepared to spend time with them, prepared to look after them and to show them a different way, they would behave differently. And, you know, it's a complex piece of work, but rites of passage definitely enable young men to become fathers, to become responsible in older life.
I think that is so important. There's so many cultural aspects that in our modern world, regardless of a person's background, that we need to really come to understand. It has always been perplexing to me that as soon as someone's supposed to be turns 18, by God, there's a magic wand that's waved over their head. You're an adult, that's it. And I am appalled, I really am appalled, at how many people I have counseled and worked with that are in their 30s and their 40s. They may have the fine cars, they may have, you know, a lot of success around them, and they're still acting like 20-year-olds. And it's male and female, but the males especially.
Yeah.
And we have, I think, reached a point where instead of having an expectation that someone is supposed to be mature by the time they reach 20 years of age, they're supposed to be a responsible member of society. It just really irritates me no end when people talk about young adults. Yes, they're young adults, but they're children. I beg your pardon. They are not children. They are adults. Stop treating them like children. And when it comes to the males, we have so many that get involved in gangs, that get involved in environments, and just what you've said, it's an initiation. And the stuff that they will do many times would just curl every hair on your head. And if there's no one to supervise them, and to give them an example, oh my Lord, it's awful.
Well, it's you know, they're desperately trying to become men, and as you said, the role models they've got are from the media, are from, you know, the culture in which we live, and so they think to behave the way they do is to be a man. And you know, when I've worked and lived with indigenous people around the world, you know, that's absolutely the opposite of what it is to be a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what a young man needs to look at older men for is respect, you know, to see that actually becoming old is a good thing, is actually a wonderful thing. And our culture is so focused on being young, being virile, being all of those things, that we've got no cultural understanding of the beauty of being old.
Mm-hmm.
The absolute wisdom that comes with old, you know, the letting go of all the responsibilities again, you know, as elders, we go through that period and then we become beautiful teachers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and our young people are desperately peer-initiating each other, so they're doing it amongst themselves. Without any supervision. And, you know, as older people, we're failing our teenagers. I always say, you know, we want our kids to have maybe 2 years of rites of passage and then they become grown-ups by the time they're 21 or so. I always say, you know, it's 13 to 30. That's how long it takes to become a man. It's not a simple little process that we can get done in a year or so. It's 13 to 30. and they need to be held and supervised and praised and need to make mistakes but also encouraged.
Absolutely. And being responsible, being held accountable, we have reached a point where it's all of this nonsense. Oh, it's all right. You must have had a tough childhood. You had blah, 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 blah. Look, everybody has it tough on one level or another. It is, how are you going to be able to work with problem solving? How are you going to develop resiliency? How are you going to be able to deal with the pitfalls in life? I have yet to meet a successful person that hasn't gone through the dregs of hell on one level or another, and that's a word that I'm using because it emphasizes the dark nights of the soul that often we'll have to go through. And there's no placebo out there that's going to fix it. It's part of growing up. It's part of understanding there is an adaptation sometimes we have to go through. And you have this character, Roger, in the book. And, oh, my word, I read this. I said you could take just about anybody, pick them off the street, a young male off the street, and they would fit this.
Yeah.
And I brought to mind how in the 1930s, that is when the term teenager was developed.
Yeah.
That was a non-existent term before then. Kids had experiences of working when they were younger. I'm not saying it was a perfect world, and I'm not advocating any kind of abuse of children. So anybody that wants to get on to that genre, that's not where I'm going. But there was an accountability and a level of responsibility that was expected of young kids. And this has totally dissipated in many respects. And we literally are dumbing it down. These young people are not stupid. They're not stupid. And having a good role model, especially the male, where they are taught certain things, that makes a big difference. Is Roger, the character in the book, patterned after you?
No, fortunately not. But he's patterned after a lot of people that I know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of men that I, you know, read the book are saying to me, is Roger me? I'm going, a little bit busy maybe, but, you know, I think it's so important that he, you know, ascends, that he goes upwards. You know, he as with all teenagers, as with all young men, they move upwards very rapidly. But what happens that he's hurt is that he comes across disappointment, not success.
Mm-hmm.
And say in the book, you know, what is the test of a man is how he reacts to disappointment, not to success. You know, so it's the disappointment that makes him a mature man. And I think culturally we've missed out on that. You know, we want our kids, we want our young people to not be in pain, not to suffer, not to make mistakes. And actually that doesn't allow them to mature. It doesn't allow them to reach wisdom.
I agree with that. I love this one section that you have in the book because you take the character Roger through various age levels. He's 28 years of age, and there's this particular activity, and he has developed this, well, women, we're just, I'm just going to hit on women, and I'm going to pick them up and discard them. He had absolutely no respect for women, and he couldn't because he didn't have any respect for himself either. I mean, you cannot respect anything unless you develop that inner self-respect, too. And there is one of the women that looks at him and says, you make me sick. Grow up. You're a grown man. Stop acting like a teenager. And I thought, yes, that's a very good statement. That is very, very true. But then you have this beggar that is in the story. And I love how there is this full circle that comes around. And the beggar ends up being the teacher. Who did you base the beggar on?
Yeah, he's very much based on a very good friend of mine. A lot of his story is very true. You know, he's the most ego-less person that I've ever come across. Because, he faced so many dark nights of the soul, as you said, that he's not afraid anymore, you know, and he has an incredible calmness, an incredible kind of equanimity towards life, because he says, you know, he faced it all. And, you know, I think this is the important part of the book is Roger dislikes the beggar, feels the beggar has missed out. You know, Roger in his terms is very successful.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this man who is a beggar, who begs on the streets and is dirty and all those things, is actually a lot more successful than Roger.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key to this, you know, pain and disappointment, is at the point of disappointment, Roger has to look for, you know, alternatives, because the culture of business, the culture of success, has failed him, and he needs something else. And that's why he turns to the beggar. And suddenly, that's what I love about this man. You know, I've known him for 20 years, is that he never offers anything to you. You have to come and ask him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a huge lack of ego. So he doesn't set himself up as a teacher at all in that sense. He just says, you know, if you want something, ask me. You have to ask me for it.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to instant gratification. And we're also used to teachers teaching us from the front, you know, telling us what to do. Whereas the way that the beggar works is he teaches from behind. He allows Roger to grow, allows Roger to make mistakes, allows Roger to get there himself. And I think that's a huge part of the slowing down of the ascent of a man into a descent. Because we think descending is, you know, bad in some way. But it's actually very good, quietening down. You know, we don't have to rush around so much. Take some time, look at the world, you know, enjoy life.
I agree. Now, the wolf is used throughout the book, and you have the segment of example. And one segment that you present is that the female in the wolf, or within the wolf, teach the young wolves how to survive. And they do it, and there's a lot of play, and there's a lot of fun. And anybody that's watched programs on Wolves, it's a family unit. It's so powerful. But the day comes when he's thrown out. The male wolf is literally thrown out of the pack.
Yeah.
And he's got to learn how to fend for himself.
Yeah.
And this is a lot of the difficulty. People, I think, have psychologically gotten to a point, as you mentioned earlier, I don't want my child to suffer. I don't want them to go through the tough times. But that's part of what childhood is about, is the training, the discipline, the learning, so that they do stand on their own 2 feet before they're even 18 years of age. But this is something where you need to learn how to deal with yourself and how to deal with the world around you, and that sometimes there's not a safety net. You have to pay attention.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that, you know, because he has to learn, you know, the teachings say, you know, he has to toughen himself. He has to get a coat of armor, almost, you know, to toughen himself to the world, to be independent. But then the teachings say, you know, if you keep on doing that, you go to depression. You know, if you don't also mellow at some point, you know, and this is what our young lads who join gangs, who are on the streets, those kind of things, they're toughened, but they never get mellowed again. So they
mm-hmm.
just keep toughening themselves. And that's where, you know, the mistake that we've made with men is that we expect our men to keep on being tough. And the disappointment and the pain has to be felt. And, you know, what the wolves are teaching is that you do that toughening, you know, you learn your independence, you go out in the world, you make something of yourself, but then you come back and you give it back to the community. You know, you
mm-hmm.
come back and find your clan, and you share the skills that you've learned in the toughening with them, and you come back into community to be of service to the wider community.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're all here for. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's why we're doing the work. you know, and our men are just expected to toughen up and then keep being tough, and that way they remain teenagers. You know, they remain in that mode of toughening themselves up and not allowing emotion through.
Mm-hmm. I love this segment in your book, and I'm going to quote it directly because it's part of the conversation with Mr. Magic, which he was called by one person, the elder, and Roger. He said, Roger, you, and this is one phase that Roger's going through, you've asked for help. Most men find it difficult to ask for help. They're normally too proud or too stupid. You used to think you knew it all. Now you are seeking to learn. That's a much more positive place to be. How many times have women said, my husband just will not listen. They will not stop and ask for direction. I mean, that's one of the oldest stories around. And this makes a statement about it, about how it is important for a man to acknowledge he doesn't know it all, for heaven's sake.
Absolutely. It was, you know, in my own personal journey, I was a facilitator. You know, I facilitate, I run classes, I do, you know, run workshops, all these kind of things. And about 10 years ago, I suddenly said to myself, wow, I haven't actually been to a class as a pupil, as a student, for maybe 10, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I suddenly started going to classes as a pupil. And that was a huge maturation for me, because it was me saying, I don't actually know this all. I need to be taught as well as to be the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real archetype in masculine behavior, men's behavior, around I'm always the teacher, I'm always the boss, I'm always the one who's telling people how to do it. Whereas actually, if we're going to mature as men, we need to say, hey, I don't know everything. Please teach me.
I think that is so important. I think it is something that a male needs to be able, just like the character Roger in the book, and I love the beggar, I really do, and him saying, you can't know it all. You cannot possibly know it all. Be willing to learn. There are these false gods of pride and arrogance, and they get us into trouble all the time.
Absolutely.
And you just need to know that everything and everyone around you can be your teacher. Everyone. But you have to be open to learning. You have to be open to saying, I don't know how to do this.
A woman friend of mine said, you know, her husband, if confronted with a question that he couldn't answer, would make it up.
Mm-hmm.
So he would make up an answer. He would lie, basically, rather than say, I don't know.
Right.
And that's a real male classic kind of way of being, you know. Confronted with something that you don't know the answer to, you make the answer up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Whereas women would say, hey, I don't know, you know, let's find out.
Right, and that is what I think is so frustrating when men are interacting with women, that they, and this is the adult male, when the male comes across with a lot of bravado. Now, maybe there's a lot of women out there, they're looking just for a hunk and they're just looking for a boy toy. Well, that's one thing. But most women want to have men in their lives that they feel that, one, they can trust, two, that's dependable, three, that will love them regardless of what goes on and will be there as a support, and four, is not an arrogant son of a gun who is going to proclaim that he knows it all, that he's got to be the dominant one. It's a partnership that many women are wanting. And if you don't have young men who are brought into the environment of mature men that understand this, they may go through life, the men may go through life and saying, I'm looking for love in all the wrong places. I mean, that's a theme of a song. It was played out. And then when they're old and gray and they wonder why their lives are so empty, they have, one, forgotten their heart. Two, they've been role-playing something that's not real. And they've closed themselves off from their families. I think of a member of my own family before he died. He was in his middle 70s. And he told me, he said, the way I lived my life, I deeply regret what I did to my family. His kids, he had four or five of them, and they all hate him with a passion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he couldn't reverse that.
No,
everybody was relieved when he died.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a sad statement. That is not the way a man should live his life. And it's not an either-or, it's a partnership. And that is something that you address: love, collaboration, sharing, friendship. And I love the story of the beggar, where he said at the certain point when he actually had met Roger, he was in a level of insanity. And he said, being a beggar, me being a violent jerk, was actually a value to society. And I thought, what a powerful statement that is. But he chose to wake up. And that, the story, the alpha wolf, and the rite of passage with the male is just extremely important. Your core values, acceptance of self totally, taking full responsibility for your thoughts and actions. Every act has a consequence. Non-judgmentalism, and this goes on. I mean, anybody can incorporate these core values. And Nick, I think you've just done a fabulous job with it.
Thank you. Yeah. It was an easy book to write. That's always a good sign, isn't it? You know, it just flowed, and I was able to write it very quickly. So I felt really good with writing it, and it's very nice because it incorporates people that I know and a few fictional ones and things like that. As with most novels, there's a lot of truth in it as well, which is very important.
Well, I really think that the wisdom that you have in this book, male or female, whoever reads this book, they can read it through, and I would suggest you have a highlighter, because I think, male or female, the values of character are so important. And in a world that is going through so much upheaval, and I mean globally, all world, not just the U.S., not just England, not just Greece, not just Africa. But it's time to wake up and recognize the core values that you have in this book apply to all of us, really. And I just think it has a depth and a profound wisdom in it that can benefit anybody that reads it. For those of you listening, you can go to Nick's website, nick-clements.com, and he is in an area near Bristol, England. Wonderful writer, nick-clements.com, C-L-E-M-E-N-T-S. Check it out, because if you're dealing with young people and you're saying, I just am at my wit's end, this is a book you could sit down with a young person and say, you're going to read it out loud. Make them read it. Anything that enables them to start thinking. It is very, very important. And if you have a family, do it together as a family. If you want to, as an adult, just read it through. But this is something that is so important. And Nick, I'm so glad that you, as a man, have put this together, because there are a lot of women that have made comments like this and they've been virtually ignored. But by golly, when it comes from a guy, it really does make a difference.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Bless you for that.
I really appreciate what you've done. The Alpha Wolf, A Tale About the Modern Male, a real good read. Nick Clements, thank you so much for being my guest today, and I wish you nothing but success with this book.
Thank you. Very kind.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for a moment. When we come back, we have another guest who's going to be sharing some wisdom of her own with you. This is Donna Sebo. Don't go away. More good things to share.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hello and welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're trying to reach my guest, Gloria Parker, and I'm just looking forward to having her on the air with me. Meeting Robin is the title of her publication. Holidays, oh my goodness, we've got so much going on. It's absolutely exciting. And if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, make sure you give yourself some time. I have to share with you a commentary that crossed my desk by a woman who always, her family just adored what she did at Christmas. She was a decorator extraordinaire. And you know what she did this year? She didn't put up one decoration. Her family was stunned. She said every year, and it's like 20 years or something like this that she's been doing it, she said, I was finding myself getting very apprehensive. And normally, I am so busy being busy, making everything right for everybody else. She really wasn't enjoying the holidays. So this year, she didn't put up any decorations. Now, she gave her family the option to do it, and they were sort of stunned because Mom had always done it all the time. And she said, you know what I'm doing? I'm baking cookies. She said, I'm doing stuff that I normally don't have a chance to really enjoy. She is interacting with friends, and she said, I'm going to do this my way. I really didn't want to drag out one more Christmas decoration. I didn't want to do it at all. And she said, you know what? I'm having a good time. She's giving herself the opportunity to go and do things. Now, you may not feel that way. The reason I'm sharing that with you is because so many times we get stuck in ruts about what we think we should be doing. Other people become very dependent on us, and they don't participate in anything. They're not doing anything. They're just sitting back, having a great time, and really enjoying everything that's going on. And my suggestion is, if you love the holidays, and if you're like a friend of mine that just put up a Christmas tree last night, and I had to chuckle because of how I responded to it when I was visiting with my friend's husband yesterday. He said, oh, we just put up our tree last night. I said, you've got to be kidding. I would have just gone ballistic if I'd waited that long. Because normally it takes them about 2 days to put up the decorations. That's me. And he said, oh, no. He said, it goes up. It's only up for 2 weeks. That's all she wants it. And then it's New Year's Day, boom, everything comes down. And I said, well, that I understand, everything coming down New Year's Day. And he said the reason she does that is because when she was growing up, her mom was a nurse.
Your guest is online.
Wonderful. And quickly, because we've got our guest now, I'll just finish this up. And what her mom would do would leave the Christmas tree up until March. Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, we have got my guest, Gloria Parker. Gloria, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Donna. It's nice to be on with you.
Gloria, your book, Meeting Robin, the cover on this book is extremely powerful. Two hands held together as if to cover a face, and yet the face that is seen through the hands has eyes wide open and has almost a sense of sadness to it. And when I started reviewing your book, I found that it held some interesting factors in it. Gloria, you are a woman that's very, very accomplished. You are a playwright, screenwriter. Your life has really been quite a successful one on many levels, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. I've been very fortunate as an actress, as a model early on, and now as a writer. And I was a TV writer, but it's also very nice to be writing, you know, books now.
Well, I know that, Gloria, when you put this story together, Meeting Robin, there was a great deal of emotion that went into this book because you had a little boy. His name is Robert. And he felt like he was in the wrong body from the time he was just a little person. Give us a little background on your son, Robert.
Well, you know, I think the opening line of the book really says from his point, it's if I may, my name is Robin. Not a name given to me by parents. They never even knew there was a baby girl born to them because my entire life has been lived while trapped inside a boy's body. And it wasn't until he was much older that he knew that Robin was there, but he hid her. He suppressed his identity.
There are people that I've met in my journey of life that really had a challenge with this. And society overall in our Western world has a very difficult time dealing with that. I know of men that have said, I don't understand this. I just don't get it. Well, you can't if you're not living it. And I remember as a teenager reading about a plastic surgeon. I think she was the first plastic surgeon in the United States. And she had come from Europe. She was, I believe, German. And there was a couple that came to her. And I think this took place back in the 40s. And they came to her, it would have been the late 40s. And it was a very tall, strongly built woman, and a very short, petite, structured man. And they presented to her the concept of having surgery to reverse their physical sexuality. Now, as a physician at that time, that was just amazing to her. But what was even more amazing is that this pair, they had actually done study and research of the human anatomy and presented to her the diagrams of how the surgery could be done. Now, here
she
is.
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
It really was, and I've never forgotten it. I was a teenager. I don't know whatever happened to the book, but I never forgot her statement because the book was about her life. And she said it was the most amazing thing that they had presented to her, because every bit of it made sense. They knew the structure of the nervous system, everything. But at the time, she said, as a physician, as much as I'd like to help you do this surgery, I cannot. It's against all of the ethics in my medical profession. So this couple went away. And the woman felt she was a male and was in this female body. And the petite man felt like he was a female. And they apparently had become very, very good friends, extremely intelligent individuals. but their bodies were not them. Now, I know some people listening to this might say, you're nuts, but this is a real thing.
It is a real thing. And, you know, Donna, the Indians, the native tribes, knew this early on. They called the people twin spirits, and they were revered in Native American culture. Now there's still a tremendous stigma. Last night I was giving a book talk, and there was a big hulking man sitting at the bar, and he was an ex-Marine. Mm-hmm. And he sort of pouted through the beginning of the talk, but by the end, he was so open and so willing to accept a different lifestyle, and this is a possibility, that I think that what we have to all do is keep communicating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's so important. Now, there are those that, in this kind of conversation, would be very uncomfortable. And the reason they would be uncomfortable is that they cannot conceptualize it. It doesn't seem logical to them. But all of us, every single human being on this planet, has a male side and a female side. And dependent on the chemical cocktail that we are given, predisposes us to perhaps one or the other. And what is so frustrating to people, and I have known people like this, who are the female, like your son, in a male body, mm-hmm. that they never have a safe harbor. And your book about meeting Robin, you really try to bring an understanding about this. Now, when your son brought this information forward to you, how old was he?
He was about 14, 15 years old, and it was the hardest thing I think I've ever had to deal with, and we put it on the back burner. I talked him out of it. He suppressed it, and it wasn't until in his 20s that he said, I have to live the way I have to live, and Mom, if you don't along with me, then I have to go alone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, that wasn't an option for me, and he sent me lots of literature and books, and I started to understand what he was going through and what a lot of people are going through, and I saw it as real. It was real. It wasn't mm-hmm. just something he made up, some odd perversion. It was real.
Mm-hmm. I think that there are many people that will say, and of course, this is a very small segment of the overall population, but again, it has something to do with the chemical cocktail that is being put together within the mother's body, within the child's body, and I don't know that this is ever going to be totally understood, because I think sometimes things just happen. And
many people are born with things that aren't correct. So it's quite plausible to me now that you can just happen to be in the wrong body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And be someone who is really, truly, I mean, when you know Robin is truly a female and very happy when Robin is being Robin, not being Robert.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Robert was never very happy.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that
so
is
Robin is his true identity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stuck without pronouns. I have a child in transition, so it's left me without a pronoun. Do I say he? Do I say she? But I think you understand. I think for all of us, that becomes an issue.
Well, it can become an issue, and then I think it's up to that individual to let us know how they want to be described. But it is a phenomena that has occurred in every culture on this planet. It's been every culture. I don't know of any culture that has not had this in it. And there may be some that listening to the show that say, oh, yes, Donna, that didn't happen here and there. No, most of it was hidden. And I think it's very healthy when we can talk about this. And it's not it is psychological to a point, because this is something they're feeling, but it is mm-hmm. not psychological in another respect, because it's the whole package. It's the mind, the body, the spirit, the emotions. They are all of a particular gender, and it doesn't fit in the body that they're in.
Donna, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your understanding of it, because, yes, that's exactly the way it is. They are completely holy in all levels in the wrong body and a female. And we need to talk. We need to open up. We need to make this path easier, because we're different. We're all different. This, you know, our little petty prejudices don't really belong in the middle of our lives.
I agree, and it is only with education that we can come to an understanding with it. And I think the downside when someone is in this kind of a quandary, and I think your son is very fortunate in having a mother who is brave enough to write about this, and that, again, is what your book Meeting Robin is all about, Gloria. But I think it's so important that we recognize the diversity in life, and that for whatever reason, it is not something that is obscene. It is something, it is very rare, first of all, and also that when it does occur, we need to have compassion. We need to be able to look at understanding certain things, and that if a person needs to go through a surgical procedure or whatever, that is fine. That is okay, but you want it to be done in as safe a manner as possible.
Yes.
And this is something with Robin, with your son. How old is he at this time?
Well, he's an adult, and he's living in California in West Hollywood. And, you know, he's getting tremendous help from the LGBT community, where they have therapists, they have doctors, and they work with young people that want to make this change or know this. And so they're guided through the hormones and through the surgery and through everything that is needed. It's kind of wonderful to have that. We didn't have it when in the 70s or when I found out in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. it's now it's really come to the fore.
Well, Gloria, your book, and I know we've only got a couple of minutes here, Meeting Robin, it's a very powerful discourse, and it's a very personal discourse, as you have expressed
it
in your book. And I think that it can make a difference with our understanding that the human experience is not black and white. The human experience covers so many different aspects. And we should be aware of being open to understanding certain things. I think too many times we get ourselves into trouble because we want things black and white. And it makes us feel cozy and comfortable. But life is a rainbow. It is not black and white.
Yes, it is.
And Gloria Parker, your book, Meeting Robin, goes a long way to opening up someone's mind and awareness to another aspect of human experience that most people will never, ever have in their own space. But if they should have this in their family, it's going to give a compassion and an understanding that allows an individual to know, number one, there's help that they can get, but two, that there are options to work with and being at peace with themselves. Who they are.
And Donna, so is your show making a difference. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Gloria Parker, what is your website that people can go to find out more about this subject?
The LGBT communities. I suggest my book. There are a lot of books out there. And Meeting Robin, just for everyone to know how it's R-O-B-Y-N.
R-O-B-Y-N. Well, I like your final words. You say, so that you and all who are like you will know how dearly you are beloved, your mother.
Thank you.
I think with those closing words, we'll say goodbye. But, Gloria, this is wonderful. And keep on speaking up, speaking out, because I think understanding creates a wonderful light that dispels a lot of ignorance.
Yes, it does. It creates reality for all of us. Thank you, Donna, for having me on your show.
It has been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we are going to be talking about the ingredients of outliers. Have you ever heard the word? I hadn't. O-U-T-L-I-E-R-S. John Schufelt is going to be educating us tomorrow. And I found it a fascinating word that I don't know many people. I haven't met one that has ever heard of it. And then we're going to be talking with Tim Hawk, 50 Rules for Sons, and also Elliot Connie, Solution-Focused Marriage. Ah, yes. And we've got so many other wonderful guests that are going to be coming up. I want you to know that this is just a delight for me to do because it opens and expands my world. All of these wonderful people that have taken the time to write about their experiences, their wisdoms, their insights, and we get to share them with you on the Donna Sebo Show. Now, I know we're out of time, so I'm not going to give the phone number for calling because I won't have enough time to talk to you. However, I did want to address an email that was sent to me. And this is what the email said. It was sent by a woman by the name of Sharon. She said, can you direct me to or give me information on what to do with the physical and emotional feelings with what I believe is empathy? I finally connected that when disasters happen, I get sick and emotional, and I don't know what to do with it. Thank you for all the great work you are doing, Sharon. Well, let me see if I can put it into a little capsule of information. When you have intuitive skills, when you have what might be labeled as psychic skills, you have a level of sensitivity that you need to learn how to train. You are not to be its victim. You are to understand that you have this sensitivity and you want to become aware of it. So one of the first steps I recommend people do is keeping a diary, keeping a journal on when experiences happen, how the physiological system is responding, and actually put down the date, the time of day, and how it felt in the body. There are those people that are very, very sensitive physiologically. There are those people that are very, very mental. There are people that combine that and other things. So we're all very unique in how the intuitive factor works within us. If you find yourself getting ill or feeling ill, you need to sort of detach and say, I am getting this sensation in my body. Where is it starting? How is it beginning? How long does it last? And then pay attention to the things that are going on. And what you may find is that you have a strong empathy with energy that's, let's say, earth energy, Oh, my goodness, we're out of time. I need to talk to you more about this. So, Sharon, if you're listening, I'm sorry I'm not having enough time today to address this totally, but I will continue my discussion with this. And if you go through that, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. You are never, at any time, a victim. You have the power to make the right choices for you. We're out of time. God bless. Have a magnificent day or evening, wherever you are. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.